Today is April 29th, 2015, and this is episode number 304 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor of TMO, and man, I feel like I'm in Groundhog Day.
I prayed, Jeff, and numbers 3, 4, and 5. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. If you'd like to comment or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at acm@macobserver.com.
So, you're not really free after all.
I am not free. I am not a free man. I am not a free man. I am just not as cool as number 6.
But there's more of you because...
I know there's three of me. Of you. 3, 4, and 5.
I bet that's great fun at parties.
It is. Well, it was. If you could see me.
Right. Sure.
You know, that's apparently the hard part. Now, if you have any idea what we're talking about, for bonus points, tell us. I'd be curious. Curious if anyone actually has any idea.
There's someone out there because we have some pretty cool listeners.
We do. We have great listeners, and what a fantastic segue because we have some listener mail.
So I hear.
We have some listener mail. That was a weird intonation. Hi, guys, says David Herrera. I listen to and look forward to your podcast every week. Woo! As a matter of fact, I listen to your podcast, among others, when I run. I've tried the armband and found that it works kind of sort of okay. In warm weather, at least. I don't like carrying it in my pocket. I have an iPhone 5S and carry it in a pouch that goes around my waist. Now, I think he's referring to when I suggested that you put yours on a lanyard and then, like, duct tape it to your chest.
Because you're really helpful like that.
I know I am.
Yeah, I am sure Mr. that's helpful. What he's referring to.
David Herrera says it fits snugly into the pouch and the iPhone does not bounce around. It does look like it would fit a 6 Plus. This is the best solution I have found. I found this pouch at the Big 5 and it's made by Nike. Hope this helps and have a great day. Signed, Dave. Thank you so much, Dave.
Dave, that's awesome. Thank you. And I'm going to go check that out. There's a Big 5 that's near-ish to me. And so I'm going to do a little road trip and go check it out. And if it works, then every time I'm running, I'll be thinking of you.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Jeremy sends, listening to, you know, by the way, you notice I just skipped right past the idea that I might possibly be running. We you know, that didn't even enter the realm of conversation, let alone, you know, imagination.
Well, I just assumed you're already taping your phone to your chest, so this conversation was irrelevant for your needs.
Jeremy says, listening to episode 303 and the comments about hardware not going to make a difference between iOS and Android, there was something missed. Now, if I may interrupt there, I don't think that's what we said. But Jeremy has the benefit of something we don't, which is that we don't listen to ourselves. We have no idea what we said.
No. Yeah, well, welcome to our world, people.
He says that it's a significant advantage when discussing those things. He added, Google may supply Android, but it is the hardware manufacturers that determine which devices they will push it to. And part of that is based on the bloatware, I mean skin, that the hardware manufacturers want on their devices. Since Android phone manufacturers aren't as smart as Apple in releasing pure Android so that every device is the same, this will continue to be a difference outside of the U.S.,
Yeah, that's absolutely true.
I wish I could remember exactly what we said.
I'm wondering if what we were trying to say was that hardware for Android devices won't matter, but in comparison to iOS devices, there'll still be a big difference.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at PCs today, and it took a long time for this to happen, but the race to the bottom in the PC market meant that everyone stopped, except for Apple, stopped doing any kind of R&D for any kind of technologies that went into their computer. The only kind of R&D they would do would be, you know, like manufacturing.
It was for production efficiency. Yeah.
And on the phone side, we're getting to that point pretty quickly. You do still have different form factors, and form factors matter a lot more in smartphones than they do desktops. But there's not much, I don't know. I don't really think, I don't really think hardware is going to matter much. It's going to matter increasingly less on the Android side of things. I think that's what we were saying.
I hope that's what we were saying.
Episode.
Because that sounds actually pretty intelligent.
Maybe. Let's not push it.
All right, fair enough. All right.
Yeah. Let's not push it. All right, we appreciate the emails, please. If you have anything to say, definitely write us. You can tweet us. But I'm Tim O'Brien with a Y.
Yes, you are. And I am J Gamut with a J.
Excellent. That's very, very good. We'd like to hear from you. This is a big week for Apple. You know, I mean, Apple just has so many big weeks when it comes to financials that it's almost like, you know, another record quarter.
Yeah, it's funny. It's almost not news. Or no, it would be bigger news if Apple had a bad quarter.
It would be huge news if Apple had a bad quarter. I mean, it would be huge news. The stock would tank. Apple will be... For the foreseeable future, Apple would be disproportionately hurt by any kind of miss than it will be helped by any kind of beats, meaning when they beat estimates.
Right, as opposed to headphones.
As opposed to headphones or music. But that wasn't the case. They sold a record number of iPhones, like what, 61.2 million iPhones?
That sounds about right.
You know, and year over year numbers were up 40%. Revenues were up 55%, meaning that more and more of that huge number of people who bought iPhones, more of them bought high end iPhones rather than, say, you know, last year's model or 2 years ago or whatever.
Right. So that's pretty impressive and good news for Apple.
Yeah, good news for Apple and Apple shareholders and those of us who like their products, because it turns out Apple's got enough money to keep the lights on a little bit longer.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, thank goodness. Apple also sold a record number of Macs for the second quarter, 4.6 million. That was up 10% year over year, but only up 2% in revenues, meaning that those sales actually did the opposite of what they did in the iPhone. They skewed towards the lower end of Apple's product line.
So that's kind of interesting also.
It is kind of interesting, and I don't really know what to make of that. I mean, I really can't imagine that more Mac Minis were sold. If anything, it seems like more of the less expensive iPad Airs were sold or something, because Apple hasn't had any significant price decreases to account for revenues not rising, not keeping pace with units. But 4.6 million Macs, man, I mean, you know, I remember it wasn't that long ago when we're worried about Apple being able to sell a million Macs in a year.
Right. And now...
Well, it was a long time ago. It was more than 10 years ago, but that's beside the point.
Yeah, but if we say not that long ago, then it makes us feel a little bit younger.
A little bit.
Right. Yeah, but we went from... A decade ago, let's call it, to a million Macs was a huge thing.
Probably more like 15. I'm sorry, I'm mostly pedantic, but more like 15 years ago. It would have been like 1999, 2000 years when iMacs were first starting to take off.
Yeah, you're right. That would be about 15 years ago. Yeah. So, all right. But yeah, a big change from then to now where Apple is selling more than 4 million Macs a quarter. And they're watching the numbers increase in a market where overall PC sales are still declining.
Yeah, down, you know, the overall market was down 7% in the early numbers for the March quarter. And Apple's unit sales were up 10%. I mean, that's, you know, that's astounding. iPad sales didn't do, we're going to talk more about the Mac later.
Oh, so that's like foreshadowing.
That's foreshadowing, yeah. iPad sales were down year over year. Apple sold 12.x million iPads. The iPad is not doing... I don't think the iPad is doing as well as Apple thought it was going to be doing. But I also don't think that Apple is particularly worried about it.
It sure doesn't seem that way. I mean, when pushed about iPad sales, Tim Cook said it is what it is and acknowledged that iPad sales are being cannibalized by other Apple products and made at least to my mind, he made a comment about how this is the good kind of cannibalization.
Yeah, because he was saying that on the low end, iPad is being cannibalized by iPhone, and on the high end, iPad is being cannibalized by Macs.
And that's interesting too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And he said it is what it is.
Right. So that was kind of his way of telling the analysts, look, don't worry about this. It's going to be fine. Yeah. So, seeing the cannibalization like that on the Mac side, I find that to be absolutely fascinating because this is a product line that for quite a while, people looked at not irrelevant, but very low on the scale for Apple revenue. And now here's this product line that's eating into the iPad, which...
Yeah, it's interesting. And, you know, Apple has always been a company that is not afraid to cannibalize itself.
Right. Well, yeah, there you go. And here's Tim saying it is what it is. But if they're cannibalizing themselves, the money's still coming in. It's just right. Different products, and it might mean different amounts of money, and yeah.
Right, and there's a couple of things. I think that more people are finding iPhone 6 and iPhone 6 Plus, as well as the larger phablets on the Android side.
Man, why do you hate me?
I just do. It's my special way. But people are finding the larger smartphones to be everything they need. Right, so they're not going to carry around a tablet, and they're not going to carry and a smartphone. Both, I personally do, but that's completely irrelevant.
Yeah, but still, but you're right. This is exactly why a lot of people are buying an iPhone 6 or 6 Plus, because it consolidates their tablet and their phone, and now they're only carrying one device.
Yeah, absolutely. And I also think that people who do like their tablets, they're keeping them longer. They're keeping them like on Mac products, ownership cycle lengths rather than smartphone cycle lengths. They're certainly not upgrading them every 2 years. I think they may be upgrading them every 3 to 5 years. I mean, mm-hmm. I've actually heard anecdotes from people who talk about still using their original iPad and their iPad 2.
I know people that are very satisfied with their iPad 2.
Yeah. Quite frankly, the iPad Air 2 is a massive upgrade from the iPad 2, let alone the original iPad. But it just seems pretty clear that the way people are using them, they're quite content, and so they're holding on to them a lot longer. Like I said, it's very, very similar to Macs. People keep their Macs much longer than people keep PCs.
Yeah, that's very true. Yeah, I'm looking at a computer right now that's from early 2011. And I'm using it on a regular basis.
I'm recording on a 2008 Mac Pro. It's 7 years old now.
Well, there you go. Yeah. So yeah, my main computer is actually a 2011 MacBook Pro, and I'm recording on a 2012 MacBook Pro.
Right.
Yeah. So these are not the newest machines, but man, they're still really good workhorses. And I wouldn't be able to say the same for a PC.
Right. 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 And I wrote most of my novel on a 2011 MacBook Air.
That's right. We got MacBook Airs at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, the point is that not that we represent the entire world by any stretch of the imagination. And I think that we're probably a little more inclined to upgrade to newer iPads simply because we need to be able to write about them and talk about them and understand exactly what Apple's doing. But
that's true. Although I skipped the iPad Air 2.
Right. I did too. I went from iPad to iPad 3 to iPad Air. And I wouldn't have upgraded my iPad 3 until the iPad Air 2 if I hadn't dropped it and broke it.
Oh, I remember when that happened. I felt so bad for you.
I was pretty bummed. I was pretty bummed. And I personally will probably get the iPad Air 3 or whatever Apple calls it this year. But that will mainly be to see what Apple's doing and not because I need it. The iPad Air is a fantastic device still. So anyway, just speaking to that point, people are keeping their iPads. The people who like iPads are keeping them. And the reality is 12.5 million units is still a lot of tablets.
Yeah, Apple is still selling more tablets than its competitors.
Selling more, almost three times as many iPads as it did Macs.
Yeah, that's saying a lot. And I know people talk about iPad sales as being really down, and they're forgetting, though, how many iPads Apple is still selling.
Right. All right, and it's not like Android tablets are you know, taking over the computing world either.
No, that's true. And Microsoft Surface is not taking off. Yeah, when I still have yet to see someone using a Surface in a coffee shop, and we know I spend a lot of time in coffee shops.
Mm-hmm. It's true. Did I see a Surface somewhere? No. I met someone in an online game who said he used a Surface, and I was like super surprised.
You know, and he may have been saying it just for shock value.
it's the new gross out factor. So, Apple ended up reporting what were the actual numbers? It's a good thing we do our homework here.
Yeah, well, it's I don't even remember what day this is anymore.
It's a Wednesday because it's ACM day, dude.
Yeah. Well, yeah, there is that. Yeah, I was looking for the numbers, and now I'm not finding them quickly.
So 61.1 million iPhones sold. Revenues were $58 billion. That's a record quarter, record second quarter. $13.6 billion in earnings. That's a record second quarter. $2.33 earnings per share. That's, you know, that's a record for Apple for the second quarter. It's just, man, Apple's making so much money. Of course, more and more of Apple's money is coming from the iPhone. That's something that Wall Street is legitimately concerned about, because historically speaking, every company that has become over reliant on a single product has always stumbled and failed eventually.
Right.
I think that people probably have confidence that Apple can introduce additional products that will broaden its revenue base, but it is a legitimate concern for Wall Street to be worried about Apple's reliance on the iPhone. That is not an inappropriate thing for Wall Street to be thinking about or talking about.
Sure. But I don't think they need to be as worried as they could be, because it's obvious that Apple is working on diversifying.
Yeah, it is, right? We had the Apple Watch, of course, it's been released. Neither one of us have ours yet.
Yeah.
A little bummed about that. And we have the rumors of the Apple car. There was a question during the conference call about Apple's R&D spending, which has been ratcheting up sharply. Luca gave us a little bit of song and dance about how many products that Apple's working on, and that the fact that takes more money. And then he sort of, you know, mentioned, you know, and future products, which means Apple Car.
Which means Apple Car. Yeah, of course. That's exactly what it means.
Apple has other products it's working on. Other products that we do not know about. And those two get money. But in the short term, a massive increase in R&D spending is Apple Car.
Right. Yeah, of course it is. If Apple is looking seriously at getting into the car market, first, that's very expensive. And second, when you're starting from scratch, you have to dump a lot of money into a project.
Yeah, and a car is a big thing to design.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's all rather interesting. Apple stock had gained ahead of the earnings report, gained a little bit in after hours. It is actually, I'm looking here, it actually is down a couple of points today. $1.92 today. I think that's there's a story about Taptic engine failures. Taptic engine failures slowing the Apple Watch rollout.
That would be very interesting if that's the case. And I'm not saying that in the sense that I'm questioning the plausibility, but just that it would be interesting, especially because I believe it was John Gruber when he was working on his review, said that the Taptic engine in the Apple Watch he was given wasn't working right, and so Apple had to send him another one, and then it was fine.
By the way, fun fact. The 28 shares I own of GTAT, GT Advanced Technologies.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
I made 14 cents today because they were up a half a penny.
I mean, I'm so very proud of you, Brian. I'm really excited.
That's $20 I'm never going to see again.
No, you really won't. No. What you can hope for is to be walking down the street and find a $20 bill laying on the ground and then just consider that square for the investment.
But it won't be the same $20.
No, but sometimes you have to take it as you can get it.
All right. Speaking of $20, though, Apple also announced a big increase in its shareholder return program. They bumped it up to from like $130 million and change up to $200 million total. And so this is the money that Apple is going to be spending on dividends as well as buying back its own shares.
Right.
And for Apple to be increasing the amount of money it's spending buying its own shares back when the stock is at an all-time high, that's a statement about what the board and management feels Apple is going to be doing in the near and the medium term future.
Yeah, you know, the stock buyback thing is pretty impressive. I mean, the amount of money that they're putting into that.
Yeah, it's a lot of money. It's a lot of money, and Apple still can't return enough. It's still accumulating money. The company said, or Tim Cook and Lucas said that they were going to be borrowing money again. They were going to be hitting the bond markets again to finance this shareholder return. And that's because they still don't have enough money in the U.S. and they still can't bring it back without taking a big tax hit. And they can still borrow it far cheaper than they can bring it to the U.S. It's not bringing it back to the U.S. because it was never here.
Right. Yes, it was never here. But yeah, that just really underscores how messed up a lot of the tax laws are when it's so much cheaper just to borrow money than to use the money you already have.
Well, you know, there's two schools of thinking about that. One is that we need to make it cheaper for companies to bring their money back so that they can do that. Of course, they're only going to give it to shareholders. Most of them aren't going to actually invest anything. That's what happened the last time we had any kind of tax holiday. It was sold as a way of companies investing in infrastructure and R&D and all sorts of basics. And all they really did is give their executives bonuses and increase their dividends. Right? So there's one aspect of that. And then there's the other aspect that says that companies should be paying money in income tax. That when they're earning a profit, they should be ponying up to the government. It's part of that whole corporations are people too thing, which is a whole other discussion.
Yes,
but you know, and then there's the third flip side is that there are other countries out there that are willing to lower their corporate tax rates in order to get companies to locate there instead of here in the U.S. So when you have countries playing against each other like that, it becomes a compelling argument for us to play the same game, for the U.S. to play the same game.
Yeah, it would be a lot easier overall if everyone is on a level playing field with all this.
Yeah, it would be. And we're not. And in the meanwhile, Apple has more than $120 billion. I think it's more like $140 billion overseas, or $176 billion even. But just Apple has a ton of money sitting overseas. And even though it's making big investments overseas, it still can't spend that money fast enough. So I don't know. Hoping I think we're going to need that tax holiday, even though companies aren't going to do what the politicians will sell it as. Because getting that money back in the States and sending it out to shareholders, while it's only going to make the rich richer, at least gets that money flowing again.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And you have to start somewhere. So, yeah.
Yep.
And we pick interesting rat holes, don't we?
We do. We do actually pick interesting rat holes. And one last thing on that. Even if the U.S. were to slash the rate that it's charging these companies for profits earned overseas from 35% down to, say, 5%, just rip it at shreds, it would still generate a lot of money in tax revenues.
Yeah, and that would be handy.
That would be handy.
Yeah.
So yeah, Apple's earnings report. It was just another great quarter. You know.
Yeah. Well, you know, just another great quarter for Apple. Yeah, we call that Tuesday.
Yeah, or Monday this week. But yeah.
Right.
All right. We had two other topics, and I didn't bother to write them down. What was the next one?
Oh, let's see. Okay, so we talked about the earnings report, then...
media.
That's right, the media thing. That was one of the things we wanted to talk about.
Yeah, catch us up.
Okay, so the media thing started during the earnings report, and that was when Tim Cook said that Best Buy was now on board with Apple Pay, and so he said that Apple Pay was available in the Best Buy app right now and would be available in stores later this year. And that was big news because Best Buy is one of the big name companies along with Walmart and Lowe's. What
does this have to do with media?
Oh, because I jumped to the wrong story.
But solid work, sir.
Thank you. See, this is what happens when you have bad allergies.
So, all right, so let's just go LOLMCX.
Okay, let's just go LOLMCX. Okay, so anyhow, maybe I should just start drinking before the shows.
LOL currency. LOL Jeff drinking.
Right. Okay, so the deal is we get all this info during the earnings report that Best Buy, one of the big companies that's been backing currency, is now jumping on the Apple Pay bandwagon, and then the next day, the CEO of MCX, which is the company that's making currency, he's out the door. They have an interim CEO, and they're on the hunt for a new one.
Yeah, and it's still going to fail. This is what happens when you try to disrupt a market by building something that you want rather than what customers want. And that's MCX and currency from the get-go. MCX and currency would have been fantastic for the retailers. It would have been absolutely great for them. They would have saved all kinds of credit card fees and yippee-ki-yay. And then they've got all of our bank account information. And then when that gets stolen, the bad guys could just empty our accounts instead of just charging up our credit cards.
Right. And if there are fraudulent charges on your currency account, they have no responsibility at all. It's all on you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, this project and product and service, whatever you want to call it, was doomed from the beginning with or without Apple Pay. It never would have taken off, and it's just a pile of crap. And the reason why I take pleasure in its fall is because they did try to keep their merchants from using Apple Pay as if that would somehow beat Apple Pay. And clearly, it ain't.
Right. And since I posted my article today about the MCX CEO being out the door, I've gotten a statement from Best Buy.
Okay.
And what they're saying is that they'll be supporting Apple Pay, but that they haven't left or they haven't stopped supporting MCX, and that they are evaluating their options, and they haven't decided if they will be supporting currency when it finally does roll out sometime this year.
Yeah, that's just a huge backpedaling.
Yeah. And so what I'm reading between the lines on that is that Best Buy is really questioning whether currency is going to be a viable option for them when it rolls out.
Yeah. Currency is dead in the water. I mean, Google and Apple are going to win this particular fight. I don't know what Google is calling its mobile payment service this week, but whatever it is they're doing is going to end up being, you know, moderately successful on Android. And in the meanwhile, Apple Pay is just going to end up dominating this particular segment, just like almost everything else Apple does dominates whatever they're doing.
Right. And as it dominates, that actually becomes good news for Android phone users, because the NFC system that Apple is using for Apple Pay, it's just the standard thing. So that means that as...
Well, it's the standard thing that Android supported first.
I know, which is really funny. Yeah, so Apple rolling out Apple Pay means that as more and more companies decide they'll accept Apple Pay, that means all the Android users that are using, what is it, Google Pay, Google Wallet, whatever it is.
Yeah, whatever it's called this week.
Right. They'll be able to take advantage of that too, because the support's already there. Someone just needs to tell them, you can do this. I've met Android people that have phones that can do NFC payments, and they're upset because they don't have an iPhone. They want to be able to do Apple Pay.
Well, and to be fair, I think Apple Pay is doing it better, but that's another topic. Now, listen, we weren't even going to talk about this stuff. I'm still interested in the media thing.
All right, well, let's hop over to the media thing, which also came out of the earnings report. And for the media thing, Tim Cook talked about how he sees major changes coming to media, and that Apple can be a big part of that.
And where was Gene Munster to ask about Apple TV? Because
he didn't
ask about Apple TV. He asked about market share.
I'm like really worried about Gene. I hope he's okay.
I mean, what? It's like, Gene, here's your time. Your time is. I mean, they were probably okay. All right, I've said this before. Apple's got three lists. Apple's got the list of things that they want to go out to analysts, the list of things that they will tell analysts if they ask, and then just, you know, a big long giant list of stuff that they're not going to tell analysts. Well, this one, this media comment was like at the top of the list, and it said, and it had a little parenthetical statement next to it that said, Merry Christmas, Gene Munster, your time is here at last. And he didn't ask.
And Eddie Q and Tim Cook traded $5 because of the bet, and
yeah. Oh yeah, there was money. There was money that changed hands. But anyway, tell us what a rabbit hole. Tell us what Tim Cook actually said.
Okay, so Tim's thing was about how Apple is going to be a part of these major changes that are coming to media. And he talked about how HBO Now has been a big thing and has been received really well. And so he was going on about that. And so the takeaway from that is Apple is planning on being a big player as media shifts from the traditional cable TV package deals to whatever it's going to become. And then we have today Time Warner CEO saying that he's pretty sure Apple is planning on launching their own subscription television service later this year.
Well, what the heck does he know?
Well, okay, so Time Warner is a big communication company.
Yeah.
And Time Warner has very close ties to HBO.
What close ties?
Like parent company ties.
What? Time Warner does not own HBO.
Look it up.
Hold on here. Time Warner owns HBO.
Don't worry, I'll wait.
Assets owned by Time. Oh, look at that. HBO's right at the top of the list. All right. HBO, Skinemax, HBO Films. All right. Okay. All right. So, all right. Time Warner owns HBO. So maybe this guy does know a little thing or two.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe. Just maybe.
Okay. I had no idea, man. I had no idea. I thought that, I don't know who I thought owned HBO.
Oh, that's awesome.
I didn't realize it was Time Warner.
Yeah, well, there you go. So anyhow, Time Warner already has very close ties to Apple. They have close ties to HBO. So their CEO is in a position where he may very well be privy to information that the rest of us aren't. And so if...
Well, what did Tim Cook say about HBO? Because you included a quote in your article about that too.
Oh, I can't remember the exact wording. I don't have the article open right now.
Yeah, good thing we do our homework here.
I know.
We're professionals, folks.
Yeah. Hold on. I'm opening up the article because I have this interweb.
Oh, here. I found it.
Okay.
Let's see here. I happen to know that Traction is in the quote. There we go. We're marrying HBO's great content, our great product ecosystems, and it's clear from looking at the early returns that there's a lot of traction in there. That's what Tim Cook said during the conference call.
Yeah, that's kind of big right there. That's a tell to me.
Right. And of course, Time Warner's going to know what kind of traction HBO is getting from HBO Now. Yeah, all right. So I guess the long and the short of this is that it seems like we're finally going to get whatever the heck Apple is planning on doing in the TV space, that it's finally coming.
Right. And it's coming sooner as opposed to later. And it will be disruptive in some way.
Apple could be a part of that. We're in the early stages of major, major changes in media that are just going to be really great for consumers, and Apple can be a part of that.
Now, I'm sure when Tim made that statement on Monday, the people at Comcast and Dish, they heard that and they're like, crap.
Yep.
And then Time Warner drops this little tidbit on us today, and Comcast and Dish are like, oh, really crap.
Yeah, well, you know, right.
And... Now, but this doesn't have to be a bad thing for Comcast or Time Warner Cable or Dish or whoever. This can be a good thing for them, too. It's just that they are so married to the business model they've been using for a really long time. And it's a business model that's not appropriate for today's market. But they don't want to give that up.
I wouldn't call it. I don't think, you know, cable's not going to go away, and we have to see what Apple's going to do. I will point out to you yet again, this is the difference between you and me, the way we watch TV, right? I have TV on in the background when I'm working a lot. I don't right now, but I do a lot. I seldom do when I'm podcasting, to be honest.
Seldom when you're podcasting. Only seldom. When I'm on.
Yeah, exactly. And for that kind of TV, I don't want shows that I'm subscribing to, actually. You know, I'm going to have like some kind of science show on, or I'm going to have, you know, even the news, or I'm going to have, for me personally, a nature show. I might, maybe I'll be watching a show that I've seen a lot, or that's a rerun and stuff like that. But I'm certainly not watching news shows like that. And
when, so what you're saying is you watch a lot of Remington Steele in the background.
No, a lot of Doctor Who in the background. A lot of Castle in the background, actually. And Bones. Castle and Bones. Because, you know, because Nathan Fillion came from
Firefly
and Buffy. And David Boreanaz came from Angel and Buffy, you see. Because it all comes back to Buffy. From anyway, Bones, Castle. The point is this.
All right, who in Bones is from Buffy?
David Boreanaz. The FBI agent, the lead. Well,
okay. I've got it now. I can picture it. Yes. Yes.
He's Angel.
He is Angel. Okay. Right. I stopped watching Buffy.
Yeah. Whatever, dude. You're dead to me, man.
The show was ruined for me.
Yeah. Well, they're dead to me, too. The people that ruined it for you.
All right. Fair enough.
Very, very angry about that. You need to come back to that show. That's all I'm saying.
We'll see. We'll see.
Anyway, the point is that I don't know that cable is dead anytime soon. I don't care how great Apple's service is. The entire United States, and it's probably going to be U.S. only at first, is not going to switch over to whatever Apple's doing instantaneously.
No, of course not.
But it is going to bring change. And quite frankly, I think that the traditional cable providers will find a way to compete with that when forced to.
Right. And this is where I think that this can be good for the cable industry, because they find new models that work based on what people want now and based on what Apple's doing. So we get different price tiers. We get different options with the way we buy the content. And then people that want to stick with Comcast, Dish, whoever, they can do that, and they get deals that are better for what they want.
Right. A little more flexibility on the pricing side would be the very least change that cable and satellite providers might be forced to offer. And a lot of those deals are very much predicated upon their deals with the studios and networks. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So this may be forcing the studios and networks to allow them to be more flexible as well. I mean, there's a lot of players, there's a lot of stakeholders in all of this stuff. And whatever Apple ends up doing, it's probably going to end up forcing a lot of people to change in some capacity.
I think so. But, you know, that's part of what happens when you have major change.
Right. It's very true. So I can't wait to see what's up. By the way, TiVo, a few months ago, TiVo introduced OnePass. Have I told you about that?
No, you haven't.
OnePass. So, you know, they did the season pass, right? That was their big innovation when TiVo first came out. You get a season pass for a show, and they're going to grab you each episode.
Right, and you don't have to think about when it's on, what network. It's just I want a season pass to Buffy.
Right. And that was, I mean, it was absolutely fantastic. And they had some patents on that. I know for a while, you couldn't, TiVo had a patent on not recording, only recording new episodes.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know exactly how that patent was worded or exactly what it covered, but I know that there were some lawsuits involved. And their competitors had to drop that sort of service. But what TiVo recently introduced is called OnePass. And what OnePass does is it not only grabs shows that are being recorded or broadcast for you, it'll grab them from everywhere and not just one channel, but still only grab them one at a time. And you can still control whether or not you want new only or not. But it also will show you all of the episodes of all of the seasons that are available on the various streaming services that you can that run as apps on the TiVo box.
Oh wow!
So like, you know, the Hulu app for me, it's I've got Hulu, I've got Netflix on there, I've got Amazon streaming there maybe, and Comcast's own video on demand service, right? And so I can, and you get different icons depending on whether or not it's streaming or it's recorded. And you can go to any episode, and if it has access, or any season, any episode, if it has access to that, you can just get to it from right there.
That's really cool.
It is very cool. I'm catching up on White Collar using this even, not now.
Not at this very moment. Good save.
But White Collar, I really enjoy that show, but I kind of lost track of it, and it's been fun catching up. And it is an innovative way. It's especially an innovative way to allow us to do binge watching.
That is pretty cool. You know, if I was still doing cable TV, mm-hmm. I would absolutely love that feature. When I had cable TV, I loved having TiVo. Absolutely loved it. It was the only thing that made television bearable for me.
Sure.
And when I got rid of regular television, I missed my TiVo at first, but then I realized it doesn't matter because the content that I'm watching, I can still watch whenever I want. you know, because I'm doing Netflix streaming and the iTunes store and you know, stuff like that.
Right.
Yeah.
All right, there's one other thing I want to talk about.
Okay. And this is actually a topic that's on our list as opposed to me jumping into completely the wrong topic.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. We actually discussed this ahead of time.
Sorry about the other one.
That's quite right. It was actually a fun conversation. And that is the Macintosh. Remember that thing?
Kind of.
Hint, there's one on your desk. There's two on your desk.
Oh my God, there's two on my desk.
Yes, there's two on your desk. And, you know, it's interesting. It was interesting to me. Part of what sparked me to write the piece that is sparking this conversation is Peter Cohen noted over at iMore that Mac revenues surpassed iPad revenues for the first time since 2011. And I think that if you go back to when we crossed the other way, when iPad revenues first surpassed Mac revenues, that we probably all thought that that was how it was going to be for a long time to come.
I assume that's exactly what I assumed.
And there will probably be future quarters, like the Christmas quarter, will probably be, you know, iPad heavy again. And there could be some sort of major innovation in iPads that end up sort of reversing that trajectory and start sending iPads up and up and up again. But in the meanwhile, the Macintosh, the venerable Macintosh, this product that started in 1984 and changed in 1997 with the iMac, and then changed again in was it 2000 with the OS X?
Yep, that sounds right.
2001, something like that. Again, good thing we do our homework. It has never been more popular, and it has never been more important to Apple, and it's never been, well, maybe that last one isn't true, but it's certainly never brought in as much money. And I am fascinated by that. The piece I wrote was called The Fall and Rise of the Mac. And really, maybe that should be the rise and the fall and the rise of the Mac. But we've been on this multi-year trajectory. We hinted at this earlier, where the Mac has just grown and grown and grown, and it's growing while the PC industry is contracting,
which is really interesting. You know, that the computer that at one point people were just baffled. Why would you buy that thing? It's not a PC. And here it is gaining market share, growing in sales, while the rest of the market is dwindling.
Yeah, it's growing when Apple competes almost exclusively on the high end. I mean, Apple's cheapest, what's the cheapest Mac Mini right now? $699 or $599?
I believe it's $699.
I want to say it is too.
I remember the bottom end price rose a while ago.
Yeah, Apple actually made its entry level.
This is us doing our homework before the show.
Yeah. Oh, it's funny. You actually have to. The Mac Mini isn't even on the first page of options.
No kidding.
On the Mac section. All right. So there is actually a $499. iMac or Mac Mini.
Really?
I think that's actually that might be an older model that wasn't updated, and then the next one's $699. So, but even at $499, that's still higher than the average selling price of the PC,
which is crazy. I mean, the idea of spending $250 or $300 on a PC to me seems like wasted money. And I'm not saying that in the sense that I don't want to use Windows or anything like that, but knowing what goes into these devices, the components have to be just crap. And mm-hmm. why would I spend $250 on something that's basically no different than a Bic lighter, but with a hard drive?
Yeah.
You know, use it, and after a few months, you throw it away.
Yeah, well, yeah, maybe a year, two, maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
Probably going to break anyway.
Right.
But, you know, so Apple is increasing its sales when it competes exclusively at the high end. You know, Apple's making all of the profits now, most of the profits at the very least, And I would imagine that the only profitable PCs that are being sold right now are server class and professional class, you know, like a, you know, high end studio and animation and movie editing, video editing gear.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I mean, no one's making any money at the low end, but Apple's making money across its product line. And it's just fascinating. You know, I mean, we heard so many people just, you know, the Mac is dead and the Wintel is better and Apple has got a license or die open licensing is better. And just, you know, all these things for so many years, people hating on the Mac. And it's never been more popular than it is right now.
Yes. So all those people that were certain Apple was doomed because they weren't using a business model that they felt was appropriate, turns out they're wrong.
Yeah,
just across the board, they were wrong.
They were utterly wrong. And you know, and the Mac has just been through so many iterations. You know, it started off as what? It was a computer for the rest of us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was portable. It had a handle built into it.
Portable-ish,
yeah.
Do you remember that padded carrying case?
Yeah,
that looked like a big cooler?
Uh-huh.
Those things were awesome.
You know, and then, you know, it was Steve Jobs' triumph. And then within a year, it was his downfall. You know, Apple stumbled with its office-oriented printing solutions.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You know, mm-hmm. and then Apple had the Lemmings commercial that upset the business world. And and Steve Jobs was soon out. And then Apple sort of got its mojo. They started selling a lot of Macintoshes, and they jacked up the price, and they were maximizing their profits at the expense of any kind of market share. And you know, when John Sculley was flying high, and he comes up with the Knowledge Navigator, and it turns that into the Newton, and then Apple starts having problems, and John Sculley's out, and then we have this, you know, this series of terrible CEOs at Apple, and then we have a jillion different Performa lines.
Oh man, the Performa, Quadra, Centris, and LC, all at the same time.
Yeah.
And in many cases, the only way you could tell the difference between what you were buying across the product lines was to look at the software it came bundled with.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was insane.
It was a mess, and then, you know, Apple was legitimately in trouble, and Apple lost enough market share that the viability of the platform came into question, and then Steve comes back and he changes everything. He changes everything with the iMac. He just changes the rules, just overnight. Changes the rules. We're not going to compete on price.
Yeah, well, you know, if you're playing a game where you can't win, the answer is play a different game.
Right, and Steve Jobs understood that, and Steve Jobs' predecessors did. Now, that said, Gil Emilio, punching bag for a lot of people, but I personally believe that Gil Emilio deserves infinitely more credit than he gets.
You know, I'm actually with you on that. I mean, he said some stupid things, and he certainly had a bad reputation. The man could not speak publicly.
Yeah, he gave a terrible keynote.
But he also knew what needed to be done to keep the company alive, and I think he knew that he was going to be a sacrifice.
Oh no, I don't. I think he trusted Steve.
Well, at the very end, I think he knew he was being sacrificed.
Oh, yeah. By the end, I think he knew that. But I think he actually trusted Steve
in the beginning. Yeah, I think he totally trusted Steve.
And Steve used him. Steve used him to, you know, what a lot of people forget is that. So, all right. So, Gil Emilio started simplifying Apple's. No, he didn't start simplifying. That's actually not true. Gil started firing people.
Yeah, he started firing people, and he understood that the Mac operating system had a shelf life.
Well, and he also knew that Copeland was never going to get out the door.
Right.
Do you remember Copeland?
Oh, yes, I do. Yeah.
Copeland was like the end all be all. It was the holy grail of operating systems for years and years and years. And, you know, any second now it was going to be released and it was just going to crush Windows and it could do everything. And it was awesome.
Right. But he knew it wasn't going to happen. So he started shopping around, which was not a popular move, but a totally necessary one.
Well, and he was going to, Apple was very close to buying Jean-Louis Gasset's B Incorporated for
BOS. BOS was cool.
BOS was really cool. And I was excited about that. I actually thought that was going to be really, I thought that was going to be great.
Yeah.
Couldn't wait.
I agree. I remember installing an early preview version on one of my Macs.
Mm-hmm. I did. Yeah, I did too. I didn't use it much, but I did.
Well, you couldn't do much with it.
Right. Because it wasn't ready for prime time. And then I want to say that that Steve had one of his people reach out to Apple and say, hey, I hear you're looking for an operating system. Why don't you look at ours? And that very quickly turned into a deal for Apple to buy NextOS, or Next Incorporated, which was Steve's company, one of the companies that Steve formed after he left Apple.
Yes.
And he brought in with that deal came Steve Jobs operating as a consultant. But what a lot of people forget is that in between the time when Next was bought and Steve engineered Guillemilio's ouster, a lot more people were fired and a lot of product lines were slashed, just axed and gone.
Yep.
And these were all very necessary things. Steve had Guillemilio do a lot of the dirty work so that when he stepped in as the quote-unquote interim CEO, he sort of had like everything in place that he needed to start rebuilding the company.
Which is really smart for Steve.
It was very smart for Steve, but people don't give Gil credit for that. And Gil should get some credit.
He should, yeah. But don't let him speak publicly.
Fair enough. He's a turnaround artist, not a speaker.
Yeah, there you go.
And from there, the iMac changed all the rules, right? Apple no longer is competing on price. Apple is competing on style, industrial design, and most importantly, the user experience.
Right.
And what that allowed Apple to make a profit on its computer, something that no one else was doing. It's like at that time, Dell was making a profit, HP was making a profit, although not much on PCs. It was mostly the printer business. And Microsoft and Intel were making profits. The rest of the computer guys weren't making any money.
No, they weren't.
Steve changed that. Steve started charging a price that allowed Apple to not only make a profit, but make enough money to invest in its future.
And here is this company where people were still using terms like beleaguered and deathbed and stuff. And yet all of the companies that were mocking Apple were doing everything they could to mimic product designs from Apple.
Right.
I mean, that happened almost immediately.
Yeah, it was pretty, that was fascinating.
And then Apple started suing companies.
Yep, and won.
That was great because Apple's track record with suing companies before wasn't that good.
Right. That's totally true. And then the Mac started becoming healthy again. We switched over to OS X, and you know we had the iMac line continued to evolve. The Mac Pro line continued to evolve at that time and eventually kind of sputtered out until recently. But at that time, the Mac Pro line was evolving. And then we have the iPod. And we started seeing an increase in Mac sales attributed in large part to the iPod halo effect.
That's right. That's where we got the term halo effect. It's when the iPod came out.
Yeah. Yeah, and then the profits from both Macintosh and iPod ended up leading to the development of iPhone, and that changed the game yet again. And all the while, iMac just getting more, or the Macintosh getting more and more and more and more and more and more popular.
Right, and now here we are, with a really nice product line for the Macintosh, and still a device that's setting standards and trends for the overall market.
Yeah. Yeah, Apple has been best in class for portable computers for years now, starting with probably that second MacBook Air. Not the first one. The first one was overpriced.
Yeah, and it had physical limitations that...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But once it was just solid state, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And then once they went to that unibody design, you know, and when Apple started introducing the Retina displays to its portable computers. I mean, Apple right now is just setting all of the standards for computers, and it's all the Mac. You know, in the last four quarters, Apple has sold 24.5 million Macs.
That's a lot of computers.
It's a lot of computers. It's a lot of Macintosh computers, and it's gotten to the point where, you know. It used to be when we'd see a Mac user, say at a coffee shop, or we'd meet a Mac user at our office. Let's pretend like you and I have offices.
We have offices.
Where other people work. Well, we have offices, but other people don't work there. Let's just pretend. But, you know, we'd meet another Mac person, and it was special. And it was like, oh, you're one of us.
Right. It was almost like, you know, there was the little nod of recognition.
Yeah, the little nod. And now seeing a Mac user is not special.
No. Yeah. When I go into the coffee shops, everyone has a Mac in front of them or an iPad, but Mac. And then there's the one guy that has a PC laptop and he looks so out of place. Yeah. It's plugged in because it has to run off power all the time. Mm-hmm. And in many cases, and I'm not trying to stereotype here, this is just an observation that I've had lately. The one PC user that's in the coffee shop, they're not dressed as nice. They look like they haven't shaved or taken a bath in like 3 days.
Brother. That's a small data set, man. I've seen plenty of unwashed, unshaven, sloppily dressed Mac users in coffee shops.
Oh, I have no doubt.
I'm sorry. I was looking in a mirror at the time. That's right. I get the rest of them are all good looking and clean shaven, but not me. Not me. But nonetheless,
you rock your look.
It's no longer special, and that is, if anything, the most outstanding tribute you can make to the Macintosh and its importance today is the fact that it's no longer a sign of someone being, not that they're not special, but seeing someone is not special. It's a tribute to the Mac's success.
Yes, it absolutely is. Yeah.
All right. You know, on that happy note, we're over time, man. We're like an hour and 3 minutes.
And that's even with squeezing in an extra story.
Yes. Yeah.
All right. That's true. Well, I know how to save a little time here. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. And hey, thanks for listening.
Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by CashFly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for us. And that's all for this week.
And hey, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.
I still think you're a free man.